Hey, friend. Welcome to Houston Made, a show where I, Rusty Gates, get to talk with local Houston-based entrepreneurs and business owners about what it's like to be in the middle of that journey and selfishly gain insights as I build my own business. In this episode, I got to sit down with my very good friend, Macy Viegas, the owner and lead realtor for MV Realty Group. I've always gone back and forth on if I would ever have another realtor on the show as a guest. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized I wanted to sit down with someone just like Macy to share our various perspectives on this industry. Macy's been in real estate since 2016, where she started her career with Magnolia Realty. That's the Waco-based brokerage started by Chip Gaines, which you may know from the hit HGTV show Fixer Upper. Since then, Macy has gone on to build a thriving real estate company right here in Houston and has become a very good friend of mine. She was kind enough to sit down with me for a little bit and share a little about her story and let me ramble on about my own experiences. So listen in as we discuss the influence her parents had on her career path, the cautions that we have for people getting into the real estate industry, and the mistakes we've made in our own journeys and how we've learned from them in our respective businesses. And it's Macy Viegas. Is that a name, right?
Viegas.
What'd I say?
Viegas.
Yeah, that's because,
you asked.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
But you can say it like that. It's totally fine.
I mean,
it sounds the same.
Listen, I know that you speak Spanish and I don't, but as a half Mexican,
Viegas.
It'd be Viegas.
Fine. Yeah.
But it's, you're saying it's, you're not, it's Viegas.
Viegas. Yep.
Okay. Okay. That's fine. You get to me how your name, say your own name. That's fine. Okay. Well, we'll jump into this. Well, Macy Viegas.
Yes.
Of MV Realty Group currently.
Yes, currently.
As a part of the Roarco brokerage. You are a real estate agent, a realtor,
Yes.
I should be able to say that since I'm one too. I am very excited to get a chance to talk with you and talk about real estate. I'm going to have you tell us, tell the guest a little bit about your group and your business and all of that. But I'm just going to apologize up front for this because one of the things I try to practice is less words, better words. And I really want these interviews to be an opportunity for the guests to share as much as they want to share about their job, their industry, their journey, all of that. I was never sure if I was ever going to have another realtor on this podcast because to some degree, this is a big advertisement for me.
Sure, that's fair. That's fair.
And yet, through our friendship and us working together, I thought if there were ever going to be one, I'd want to talk with you. I think it would be a good conversation. But the apology is essentially that, I'm just going to talk probably more on this one because I have stuff to say about real estate. So we can jump in there, but
sure.
I'll do my best to give you the spotlight. So with that, would you like to tell us a little bit about you, your role as a realtor, your company, and we'll just jump around from there.
Okay. Well, so I've been in the industry now. I'm in year five. With Roarco, which I absolutely love, our brokerage. And MV Realty Group has been around a little bit now. I mean, I actually now have a buyer's agent, which is awesome and exciting. But my husband's always been the director of operations, where that's really the group is him and I. We're more of the team, but now we are three. So now we can call ourselves some more, right? But
yeah.
And I mean, seriously, it's kind of crazy. It's kind of growing fast and it's morphing itself into different things right now. So I'm really excited to see what's going to be happening this next coming year. But I mean, I've been married 20 years. I have, 22 actually. We have four kids. I'm like,
add two more.
It's not a big deal. I'm like, wait, what year are we in? Yeah. And our kids are 24, 20, 18, and 14.
Daniel. You passed, I know. I think. Phew. I mean, I'm not going to fact check
you
on that.
I know. And a grandbaby. So yeah. But right now, we're changing and growing, and we're seeing where MV Realty Group's gonna go. We'll see. I mean, I'm not sure if it's even gonna stay with that name, but that's what it is now.
Yeah, it's always changing. It's so fluid. I feel like as realtors, we invent ourselves probably a lot more than other industries. You know, you get your brand and you stick with it, but likely, I imagine, because it's such a personal relationship based business that the branding can kind of come and go and morph, and it is what it is. Realtors, we help people buy and sell and rent real estate. So houses, properties, condos, etc. You started in real estate I guess, a good little while ago, 2016, right? You had been out of the workforce for 10 years.
Yep.
And then you moved. So you'd born and raised Southern California, lived there most of your life, and then moved to Houston, Katy, technically.
Yeah. Technically, yeah.
I was late. I just want to say for the listeners out there, I was a little late to this interview because Macy said, yeah, we can record here at my house in Katy. And whenever I like put it into the map and got in my car thinking, oh, it'd be about 30 minutes, I realized that she's halfway to Austin. This may legally be Katy. This is about as far as I think I could go and say that this is a Houston-based real estate entrepreneur and business owner. But anyway, so you guys moved from Southern California or from the Pacific Northwest? Where did you move from to?
To Texas. Was from Southern California. Okay, Before that was Pacific Northwest, yeah.
So you'd been out there. What brought you to Texas?
My husband's job.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what was he doing at the time?
So he's always been in the automotive industry. So he got his dream job with Mercedes-Benz USA. And so he works for corporate and oversees 10 dealerships in the Houston area.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So lots of fun perks with that. But that's what brought us here. I always knew we'd end up in Texas.
How'd you know that?
Well, to be honest, when I was in my 20s and I was a flight attendant. I did training in Dallas. My aunt lived in the Grapevine area over there. But there was always something about Texas. And so I always said, if we ever had to move and be permanent somewhere, it would be Texas. I honestly think it was a faith thing. I knew when I heard Texas, I'm like, oh, we're going now.
Yeah.
Like it was just something I always kind of knew for whatever reason. But
that's cool. And then you move here and you said you said that you knew that if you were going to go back to the workforce,
yes,
that you'd want it to be in a place where it would align with your core values and allow you to remain allow your family to remain first. And so that ended up being real estate. You were a flight attendant, you've been a mom, full-time job, and then real estate. Why real estate? How did that happen? What was the path into all this?
So, I mean, long story short, I've always kind of been in the people business and sales in general. Yeah. I didn't realize it, but like when I really, really love something, I stand behind it and I can't help but share. Mm. So I constantly am like, oh, you got to try this. You got to do that. Got to do this.
Yeah.
And people would always say like, oh, you know, you should get into real estate because I also like interior design and all the things.
Yeah.
Which is really funny to me, but I just never thought. I'm like, no. And my dad was a realtor for years. And I remember going with him and like doing the Thomas Guide thing and like checking out keys. And if the keys weren't there, you had to wait like dinosaur age stuff that I would be like, I would never be in real estate if I were in that era because it's just too much.
But yeah, same.
Yeah. So long story short, we had to find an agent. Originally, like it started out with someone from Magnolia Realty.
Okay.
She saw something in me and she's like, hey, what's next for you? And I'm like, you know, I don't know, but I know that my next career path is going to be here. My kids are getting older, but it has to, like you said, meet with my core values. Family has to come first. It has to be flexible.
Yeah.
But I also love to guide people. And so I knew wanted to be in that space too. So when she's like, you know, you'd be a great real estate agent. I'm like, well, you're not the first to say that. My husband's been telling me that for years as well. Yeah. And I don't know why it was always just real estate. And I'm like, well, selling houses and stuff, how does that work? So I took the jump and I don't know, I had my license within a few months and, I went for it and it's just kind of been going ever since, but it has taught me so much and I've grown so much, in the space of real estate, but I didn't realize how much it is such a relationship-based business and the emotions that go with it. It's just, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But it's awesome. I love it. Yeah,
that feels like most of it. Mm-hmm. That's cool to hear some of your story because you and I are really similar in a lot of ways. I feel like we're somewhat like long lost separated siblings.
Yeah.
Because my mom, while she wasn't, technically she was in real estate, like she wasn't an agent. Mm-hmm. But my whole childhood growing up, she worked as a manager doing apartment leases. So she worked for some really-
My mom did too.
Oh my gosh.
Single mother.
It's the same mom. What's her name? Is it Lori?
Actually, Anna. But, you know, Lori Ann, whatever. Yeah. We'll just combine it.
Same thing. And so I just distinctly remember I grew up in leasing offices of these apartment complexes. And my mom has a story that she loves to tell that there was one time where she was maybe out doing a tour of the property and some people came in, she forgot to lock the door or whatever. And I was just in there. And so I was like, well, what are you looking for? And I was like 8 years old and I've got the floor plans and I'm like, there's this and there's this. And then they leased the property. They probably already were going to lease the property, but you know,
you did it.
Yeah. Supposedly
you closed them.
I closed them. And, but yeah. And so to see that, I think that there is a little bit of a legacy in doing real estate of having those, that point of reference.
It's weird that you brought that up because I never thought about that. But my mom, yeah, she, that's what she was, an apartment manager. We had like, you know, the office and then her, our apartment. And it's wild. It was very wild.
Yeah. What a trip. So you come here, the agent that says, hey, you would be really good at this, you should do this. Was that Kelly Farmer? Was that a part of her team?
Yeah, it was part of her team. And that was easy decision for me. She was a great mentor and leader at the time. And I honestly, like, she was almost like a mom and I was like a baby. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And it's very intimidating going from being home for 10 years. And then like, I'm going to school and I have to learn something new. And then like, verbiage for real estate is like a whole nother language.
Oh,
and
certainly it's just,
yeah, so overwhelming, but she believed in me and said I could do it. And so, and I mean, I have the amazing husband who supports me and was like, this is a long time coming. Like, it's almost like he was like, you're actually late. So go get it.
Go get it.
You know? And so I did. And so, yeah, it was really quick. And then started happening pretty quickly after that. It was like within a few months I was doing the thing and I didn't realize I was doing the thing. You know, you're just going and
then, you just pick it up as you go and you build those skills and build the repertoire of, again, language and what to do in this circumstance. So a lot of people might not know what a real estate team is versus like a group. So for, well, just to kind of get into it, I am an individual agent. So I am the whole of Rusty Gates Real Estate. Everything begins, ends with me. I see all of my deals through start to finish. And I've grown to leverage some things. So brought on a transaction coordinator, but even still, I'm making all the decisions. I'm the fiduciary. How would you describe a team or a group for people that, and like the, how that structure works, because when you go on, you're still a 1099 employee. You're still responsible for your own taxes. I'm assuming that's how it worked whenever you are part of it. What did that look like for you?
You know, and with, you're talking about with my team
with your first team with Kelly Farmer.
Honestly, it looked a little bit messy for me. Honestly, it just, I joined a team because I thought that's what I needed to do. And so I was completely dependent on her and her guidance. And then as far as like the structure of that, because it was a boutique brokerage, looked a little different too. I mean, way different than I'm doing it now myself. And I learned a lot from that to do here. Not to say that that was wrong at all. It's just, I wasn't really aware of what was going on. I just kind of went along with the thing. I mean, honestly. And so now I'm trying to structure it a little bit different. So it's a little bit clearer. And again, it's new to me too, as far as, you know, bringing on my first buyer's agent just with a few weeks ago. So I don't think you have to have all that stuff figured out totally. Obviously there are certain things that you do. There needs to be some structure and stuff to that, but, basically I'm the team lead. I offer guidance, try to provide some leads and then, try to help you grow. And the point I think too, is to at some point that they outgrow you, you want to see them succeed and move on and go on, that it's, there's a value there that goes back and forth. Anyone who I feel like who's going to be on my team is not just going to get that professional side, but also like I want them to grow personally and I care about them and what their families and all that stuff. And so, I mean,
well, I mean, that's excellent. That's good. It's also rare. I think that you and I would both speak that if people are listening to this conversation, this is the most self-aggrandizing thing that I don't know. I feel like I say maybe a lot of stuff along those lines, but you and I are pretty atypical, I think, for most realtors out there. And maybe that's my, like my cynic talking at this point. I've talked about with you before, and I think talked on the show before that I'm a pretty reluctant realtor. I don't like advertising that. I don't like bragging about that. It's not something that I'm particularly proud of. I'm proud now of the work that I've done for my clients. I'm proud of the service that I can offer to people, but I, by no means am I walking around being like, well, I'm a realtor, because all those values that you're carrying over, the care that you're putting forth for your team and the people that are entrusting you to teach them and help them understand and learn and grow in the business, that's just not given by so many people in this industry. Because I think the rant is that the barrier of entry is so low. How do you feel when over the last couple of years, probably what, 15 people have come to you and be like, I'm going to get my realtor's license too. How do you, like, what's your knee-jerk reaction when people say that to you?
Honestly, like, I feel like initially I'm like, ooh, but do you really know what you're getting into?
Sure.
Like, and why are you getting into it? Is it just because it's, I guess in people's mind, like, it's quick, I can get it done, you know, schooling. It's not, it's hard. That test is hard. But it's outside of that. I mean, yes, the schooling and yes, the testing and all that, but really the work comes when you're actually dealing with the people. Mm-hmm. And so I think it looks completely different than what people actually think. We are counselors. We are a shoulder to cry on. There's so many different dynamics that go into buying and selling, like why someone's buying or selling or moving and life changes, good and bad, you know? And so, gosh, there's just so much more to it than it's not transactional. It's not what people think. And it's not easy money like people say it is.
Yeah.
We are going to get some deals that, you know, kind of like, hey, that was pretty, wow, that just fell in my lap and it's fine. But no, there's just so many more hats than just like, yeah, I sell houses. No, no, I counsel people. I guide them.
Yeah.
I care for them. And it's a day-to-day relationship. And honestly, some of them I'm kind of sad when it does end. I'm like, oh, I'm not going to talk to them as much anymore or whatever. And so I think it's more of an emotional business.
Have you ever gotten to the point of almost like having to throw in the towel with all of this?
Yes.
How many times? And you've been in real estate for now 5 years.
Yeah. Really 5 years. Yeah. At least a couple times a year.
Yeah. A couple times a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, not in like a bad way, like I'm done with this. It's less like, it's just a lot. Mm-hmm. It can be a lot. And then you're trying to navigate your life and your things and all that stuff. And I think part of it, and I hate to sound cliche, but I do care probably too much sometimes, like where I'm like, maybe I need to scale this back.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't actually happening to me, but it does feel like it is because that's how, you know, dedicated and involved I am in that whole thing. So yeah, I am also very empathetic. So to draw the line sometimes too, like, oh,
that's gotta be, that's where we differ.
Yeah.
I'm just cold. I'm like, I just want you to like me. If you don't like me, I start working harder. But,
that's the key, huh?
Yeah. That's what the motivation. I agree. I think that I've definitely walked a few different people into real estate saying, hey, I want to do this. And I say, okay, here's everything that I know. Like, just take it and take some of it with a grain of salt. Get past my cynicism. But here's what I think you need to do to succeed. Go that. And I mean, I can say that I have out of the, I don't know. I think I've had probably four or five of those conversations. Four of those people are realtors right now. No, it's at least five I can think of that are realtors right now. And again, how long they'll be in it, I don't know. A couple of them are doing really well. A couple of them, not as much. And again, it goes down to how you want to run your business and the expectations. And I'll say this too, for anybody listening who's maybe interested, there's just a million ways to do real estate.
There really is.
Like, you can build a team to look like what you want it to look like. You can build a business based off very specific types of properties whether it's, I only work from $5 million to $7 million properties. Like, that might take some work, but of course the commission will be great and you can do that.
Yeah.
And you'll probably be really successful if that's all you do. And so those people have gotten into real estate. It's not a scarcity mindset. I'm not afraid of people coming in and taking business from me.
I'm not either.
I have been. I've definitely been there. But I think that I just don't want people to get their hopes up and spend a lot of money and time and be like, I'm a realtor and this is what it's going to be like. And then just be sorely disappointed and be like, oh, this sucks.
Yeah. I mean, there's an amount of, I guess, like push that and drive that you have to have. Like, you really have to want to help people in this in this scenario and then the season of life of buying or selling for whatever reason.
Yeah.
It's not so black and white. It just really isn't. And so depending on why you're doing it, really will kind of like unfold in your business and show up there it's interesting. Because there are a lot of people like, yeah, I have my license. I just, you know, I do this kind of part-time on the side. And I'm like, no, that's not a thing.
Yeah.
It's not a thing.
Yeah.
If you get a transaction here and there from a family member or a friend, that's cool. But it's not the same thing as being actively, you know, working and
Well, and I had somebody telling me a story, I don't know, maybe within this week for sure. Somebody's mm-hmm. telling me and they're like, yeah, you know, we moved and we bought a house and my mother-in-law was the realtor, which was a big mistake and da, da, da. And you're like, yeah. And you've heard that story.
Yeah.
You know, I think you can definitely do it part-time. I think you can do sure. that. Yes, there's obviously a lot of benefit from when this is what all you're doing. And this is, which I guess, like, I don't know if people look at me and be like, is this all you're doing? Like, I guess not.
No.
I don't want to answer that question. I plead the fifth. But it is my full-time income. This is how I make my money. And, mm-hmm. And the benefit of that is that you have your pulse on things because the industry is changing so much, like month to month, there's new rules and regulations. And now the market is changing. And this, I feel like the last year from now until mid 2020 was way different, more different, way more different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's accurate. Was very different from like the full beginning of COVID and all of that. Like 2021 was a much stranger year in real estate than 2020 was in my experience. How is that true for you?
Yeah. 2020 was like my best year so Same. Far. Yeah, I mean, so many things happened. I had like mm-hmm. my biggest month. A lot of personal financial goals were met. Yeah, it's interesting. 2021 is definitely more of the odd year mm-hmm. where things almost don't make sense a little bit.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we're like going like day by day.
Mm-hmm.
Going with the flow, honestly, and just kind of figuring out where the market is and trying to figure it out. I don't think anybody knows.
No. Yeah. It's all best guesses. And the benefit is now, I mean, you know, I'd never been through anything like this. I came in a decent market. Like it was just a good market mm-hmm. balanced, whatever. And so it wasn't until 2021 that I was like, oh, and to the point of throwing in the towel. I mean, there've probably been 4 or 5 times over the last 3 years that 3.5 years that I was like, well, that was a good run. We did it.
Yeah.
And that was always kind of the perspective of like, we're just going to give this all we have. And if I can no longer pay my bills with this, that doesn't mean that I failed.
Yeah.
Because you can't control the market. And so much of what we do is out of our hands. We can't mm-hmm. make someone buy a house. We can't make someone sell a house. Mm-hmm. If you know any tips on that, let me know. Yeah. Love to start
I don't manipulating. Think I'll share those with you. Okay.
Just kidding. That's fair. We don't want that on the record. But yeah, it is so much out of our control, and we're just doing the best we can again to manage relationships and give the best guidance we can. That's the other thing that I don't know that people understand so much. You said that we're counselors, but also like that's our whole job is mm-hmm. I don't want to reduce it totally to glorified middlemen and women, but we are moderators and we we are guides and experts offering guidance and advice to our clients who then are the bosses.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about like at one point you wrote about saying that you wanted to be your own boss. You didn't want to work for anyone.
Yep.
And yet like the reality of real estate is every time you get a new client, that's a new
you're
boss.
Working for them.
Yep. Yeah. They're snapping their fingers. And to some degree, you're like, mm-hmm. yes, yes. Yeah. What can I do?
Yeah. It's so true.
There's so many like pieces to juggle. Okay. Back to your journey. So you joined this team. Kelly Farmer team is a part of Magnolia Real Estate. Many people may not realize that Magnolia Real Estate is Chip and Joanna's brokerage, or at least Chip's brokerage.
Yes.
Chip Gaines mm-hmm. from Fixer Upper HGTV fame. Mm-hmm. I know you've met Chip.
Mm-hmm.
You have Chip's phone number?
No.
You that's know not how that works. You know people who know have Chip's phone number.
I do know people who have Chip's phone number. That's fair.
So we can get that.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if I know anymore.
Not anymore. But yeah.
No. Yeah. That was like such an amazing experience there. They have such a great culture and mm-hmm. Family-based business. It's super, super cool.
Yeah.
I love that it started there.
Mm-hmm.
It really, really showed me like how important like faith-based businesses is and rooted in me. Like I knew that was really, really important. Mm. So I've taken a lot of what I saw there and have implemented it now in MV Realty Group and everything I do. And so I think that was perfectly planned. I mean, I never had heard of the show. Actually, I was sick like the week before we got the news that we were moving to Houston.
Okay.
I got sick and I was laid on the couch and my cousin comes over and she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I can't find anything to watch. I just feel terrible. And she's like, oh, you should watch the show. She's like, let's see if it's on or whatever. And they happened to be doing some. Yeah, but they were doing like the next season was coming. So it was one of where they're playing all of the preview or the previous season. And so I'm sitting there watching it. And I'm like, such a fun show and whatever. And then a few days later, we're meeting. She's like, you should contact them. I'm like, they just flip houses, though. What do you mean? She's like, no, they have a real estate company. And
yeah.
I mean, it just almost was like, I really feel like God was like, here you go. And like, he just kind of laid it all out. And it just kind of very, very effortlessly just started happening. And actually didn't actually make the call to the agent. My cousin did for me. And then the agent called me.
Oh, snap.
I know. Like, she just went and did it. And so I'm like, actually just talked to her about this not that long ago. I'm like, you kind of played an important role of me being here now. Even without knowing that eventually this would be what I chose to do for, you know, this next season of life. And so that was kind of interesting. But yeah, it just kind of fell in my lap, kind of. Even though I knew something was coming, I just didn't know what it was going to look like. And so that was like the best way to transition, I think, for me.
Yeah. And so going, you watch the show, you get connected, and then you end up joining this brokerage. So again, here, this is our sidebar. A broker, a real estate broker, is essentially someone who's tasked with overseeing agents to make sure they don't break the law and also training them and equipping. Yeah. But you know, that it's the responsibility of the broker to ensure that the licensed agents are following best practices. So ideally they have been in the industry for a good period of time, done a lot of business, so they are very well knowledgeable. Not all brokers are created equal. That's one of the big questions that we have whenever I encourage people to explore when they're getting their real estate licenses, where you hang your license, quote unquote, with which broker really makes a difference in your business and what it will look like, the support you will have, the training you'll get, et cetera. So you were at this quote unquote famous brokerage, Chip Gaines, faith-based organization, and really good. And then you transitioned to Keller Williams.
Yeah.
Which is where we met, because Magnolia was no longer servicing Houston, right?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. And then now you've moved to Rorco along with me. You and I met at Keller Williams. We're both there. You were agent number one to join Rorco. I was technically agent number three, though I ought to have been number two.
We should just put out there that you're upset about it. It's fine.
I am upset about it. I think that it should be changed. It's not fair. I recruited number two to the brokerage. She just signed the paperwork faster than I did. I think it's ridiculous. So anywho, so when we talk about brokerages, it seems like you have a lot of love for Magnolia still. How has that experience been different? I mean, have you noticed an impact on your business depending on where you were? I know there was some overlap between KW and Rorco, but how's that impacted you?
I mean, honestly, it really hasn't. I think that anyone can hang their license anywhere and still be successful because really at the end of the day, people want to work with you. And if you haven't made that super evident, then that's a problem. Like, you can't hide behind the broker or the big KW or whatever it is. It doesn't work that way. I know a lot of people think it does, but it does matter. Branding does matter to some people, and longevity of a brokerage does matter. But I think that at the end of the day, it really is. It boils down to you. Yeah. But I've learned a lot from all of them. You know, going from a boutique, famous one, to, you know, KW, which is huge and worldwide, right? And then back to a smaller one. I prefer the smaller ones, but
What is it about the smaller ones? KW is going to be a hitman.
It's just more personable. I mean, I think that you can create small and enlarge, just like you do in a church, right? When you get involved. I guess naturally, without like tooting my own horn a little bit, I'm drawn to leadership, and so any space I'm in, I usually get smaller anyway. But I just like the one-on-one. Selfishly, like, kind of like want to be able to go to my broker and be like, I need to talk to you right now, not versus 200 and something other agents or whatever. I think there's something about the smallness about it. There's just a lot more connection. And I also like the fact that Rorco is from the ground up a little bit. So that's exciting because it's like we're all creating and building this together, now being part of leadership and stuff. So that excites me too. So
for sure.
There's good to both. I do love that there's a lot of that heavy training with the larger. But I also think it's just too much of like, this works for everyone.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're in a smaller brokerage, they really want to focus more on your strengths and where you will do well in order to be successful in business. And so I don't think it looks the same for everybody. And I think a lot of those big brands just think like, this is the one way. Everyone needs to do it this way. And then that's it.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
they've got to cast a wide net.
For yeah. Sure. Yeah. So,
yeah, I would agree. I think that was my experience. It was a big part of the reason why I mean, I've only been with KW and then Tororco. And a big part of that move was feeling naturally just never feel like I fit in anywhere. I think that's just a story of my life. I feel like every room I'm in, I'm always just like, oh, I don't know.
Well,
like
we also weren't friends.
Yeah, we weren't friends at KW. And I felt the same way, as that the big culture, it was easy to get lost. It felt like, I mean, and I was winning awards. I won Rookie of the Year, too cute. I remember. But even still, I did that kind of on my own. And I think that this is to Randy Olive, who is our broker who started Rorco, Randy Olive Real Estate Company. And to his credit, he just kind of always let me do what I wanted to do. I think he had enough faith in me to know that I wasn't going to like shit the bed, as it were. But also like that, like he just had faith that I would do well and would let me kind of beat my own drum and say, okay, you want to like do social media stuff? Go do that, but do it well and mm-hmm. execute. And I felt like at KW, I was always kind of like breaking rules and cutting things, not legal rules, taking care of my clients.
Yeah, let's make that clear.
Simmer down, everybody. Follow the law. Great realtor in that regard. I am a rule follower. Probably. I think Brandy would actually probably say that I would benefit from being a little bit less rule followery. But I just, again, that attention, if I have a question, being able to get a hold of somebody and say like, mm-hmm. hey, this is this. Do you remember your first deal in real estate?
Yes.
Were you terrified? What was that like?
Well, in all fairness, it was for the house next door because my in-laws bought the house next door. So that was a little bit not as bad, but it still made me nervous because it's like they're going to live next door. And what if like later on something happens with the house or, you know, mm-hmm. it's always your fault no matter what.
Oh my gosh.
But my actual first, I guess, deal with like actual clients that came from my church, I was a little nerve-wracking a little bit. You know, mm-hmm. I feel like I don't like not knowing exactly what I'm doing. And yes, I know how to fill out a form. And yes, we knew the contract and all that stuff, but there's so much more to it than that. Mm-hmm. So I found it a little bit more of like a severe roller coaster ride. Like sometimes I'm like, whee! And then I'm like, oh gosh, here comes that weird feeling in my stomach. You know?
Yeah, that's one of those this morning.
Yeah. And it still happens.
Yeah, right? It's just, yeah, they get less. Like it's less highs, like you get a closing. Yeah, that for, anyway, go on.
Yeah. And then, you know, dealing with the other agent and then realizing all of the moving parts, mm-hmm. like it really is a team effort. Like, mm-hmm. and I mean, this is probably going to go off on a little bit of a side note here, but, you know, having that good network of people that you actually work with and having those relationships with like the lenders and the title company and everything, I learned really quickly that that's super important. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have that initially, obviously. So yeah. I was like, oh, well, shoot. So again, relying on my team lead for her resources and things like that was helpful. But over time, you develop that and it's not so scary anymore. And
yeah,
sometimes it's like funny because I like the drama. I know. I always say this. It's better to like have this type of drama or watch the drama on TV than like have it in your own life and create it. But it's weird. Like sometimes I'm like, I can't. I don't like it. What? And then others, I'm like, I don't know. There's something about it that I'm like, oh, yeah?
There's a high.
You're saying we can't do this? Oh, no, we're going to do this, and we're going to get you this, and we're going to get it done. Yeah. Like, there's something about that. Like, it's almost like when you walk in somewhere, and you're like, jeans are on sale? $5? And you're like, score today. I don't know. Maybe not the same thing, but that's how it feels like to me. I won.
Yeah. But it makes sense. I think the journey of it, for sure, every deal is so unique and so different. Like you don't know what you're going to get into, right? You have this consultation at the beginning of a deal and you try to get to know who are these people, what is it they need, how can I help them? And then you just get into it and it's can be this roller coaster of good, bad, otherwise. I think you build a thickness of skin. I think you have to just because it'll just take you down. Because everything does feel like it's the end of the world, you know, mm-hmm. the lender. This morning I had a lender being like, hey, the appraiser won't accept this contract. Can you like send over a counter offer? Like just didn't understand what they were asking. Yeah.
I just, I was new to meet you. I'm like, what?
Well, and my, and the lender's like out of Colorado. And then so I just be like, I don't understand what you're saying. This is standard practice in Texas. We have a contract. We have an addendum or amendment. We have an amendment and that's it.
Yeah.
I don't know what you mean. Like, we're not going to nullify this contract and do another one. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and it just turned out that he had like received a non-signed contract from the title company or from me. I don't know. Maybe it's probably me. And so he was like, yeah, the appraiser won't accept this contract that doesn't have signatures on it. And the fact that we'd gotten that far, I was like, oh, here you go. Like, we have this. I assume the title company would have gotten this to you, but they didn't. That is what it is. But like, there was a moment, which I feel occasionally in real estate, we're like, oh no, what did I do? Like, what's wrong? What's happening now? And I think the benefit of just being in the industry longer is you have more and more answers to those questions. You have more and more of an idea of how to work out various situations. Say, okay, this is how we deal with this because we've been here 20 times before. I know how to go. That's the thing that you don't have when you start in real estate, but you just have to push through to get is that experience to say, no, I know what I'm doing because I've been here 20 times.
Right. I mean, because we do have to quickly become problem solvers. Like, and also carry the load for other people when they drop the ball, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, shoot. Well, sometimes I feel like I'm navigating all of it. Other times, if, you know, I'm not, it's better. But yeah, it's super interesting how that works. It's just problem solving all the time. But every single scenario and client is different type of problem solving. And sometimes it's extreme problem solving. And other times I'm like, again, I'm done.
I'm out.
I can't do it. But no, I do love it. It's all good.
Yeah. And so that first deal, it went well.
It did, but I think I did a lot more work than like, I remember sitting in a house that the AC wasn't working in for 2 hours in like summer heat, waiting for the AC guy to come. And I'm the buyer's agent. And really, that was more of on the list side that they need to get fixed. But I was doing more of the things you're new and you're just wanting to make sure everything gets done well. And some, I'm a, you know, some of these seasoned agents are like, oh, you'll do it? Okay.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize, like, you kind of teach others how to treat you in that aspect.
You absolutely do. So. I could imagine, I think I certainly did things like that where I was going above and beyond to doing other people's jobs because I didn't know and I didn't want to. I didn't want to seem like I didn't know what I was doing, but by doing all this extra work, it was very clear that they were like, okay, kid.
Yeah.
Like, if that's what you want to do.
If you want to do that, that's totally perfectly fine with me. And they're going to let you. I mean, why wouldn't they? But yeah, I did kind of feel a little bit like I was taking advantage of those first few deals, but I learned a lot.
Sure.
And over time, I'm like, now I turn it around. I'm like, oh, so are you going to wait with the, meet the AC guy? Now it's that kind of conversation versus like, oh, I'll go do it. No.
Oh, yeah. Not.
I know where I need to stay in my lane. You stay in your lane. Let's work together, obviously. But yeah, I'm not doing that anymore.
Certainly. Yeah. I've got a deal out in Baytown that some friends of mine came to me last minute. It was a whole rush job and an hour to submit contract and gone back and forth. And I haven't been to the property. It's in Baytown.
Really far.
It is really far. Yeah. So I paid one of the guys in our office to go show them the property because they only need to see like one or two properties and drive to Baytown like an hour each way.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, if y'all in all realist, like, I would have happily referred it out if they really needed someone to do a bunch of work down there. But for them, it was like, it's one of these two. We're going to submit an offer today. And I was like, okay, well, I can't be there today.
Yeah.
Even if I wanted to or was willing, I should say, to drive an hour back.
Yeah.
I couldn't have made it that day anyway. But like, yeah, I'll try to go out there before closing just to see it. I've sold a couple of houses that I haven't seen. And, you know, I don't love that, but.
Yeah. Well, but it's part of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. That's the way sometimes it happens. I had my last closing too, was I did not see it until we were final walkthrough. Mm-hmm. But that's okay.
Yeah. If the clients have seen it, the inspector saw it, that's what matters.
Exactly. We still did all the work and all the things that needed to be done. I felt good about it. Now, if I didn't feel good about it, which I'm, you know, that might be different. I might be like, I need to go look at this house because it's maybe A, B, and C or older or whatever. But I mean, this was a 3-year-old house. I'm like, we're probably good here.
Yeah. There's a question I want to ask, and I got to think through how it's going to play.
Uh-oh.
But what's the biggest mistake that you've ever made in real estate? And I have a story. I have a $5,000 story. So I don't know if you can beat the. I know Randy has a bigger. I think he has like an $18,000 story. But
So knock on wood, I haven't had one that has had a price tag. Oh, wow.
Good for you.
I know. Phew.
This is the biggest fear of this this interview is everyone's gonna be like, yeah, no, Macy's a better agent.
For me, it was more of a miscommunication that I guess the price tag for me was like I felt like maybe I hadn't done my job. Like, and it was actually said that way to me, and I had never been told that. And just so we're clear, I do my job. I love my job, and I'm great at it. But sometimes things get miscommunicated, and because I do leverage out too, I have a transaction coordinator. Long story short, my client was out of the country, 14-hour different time zone, was supposed to be back for closing, was told, I guess, that she wouldn't be back, but I didn't get that message. Neither did my transaction coordinator. So we're doing the final walkthrough the day before. And I'm with the spouse. I'm like, okay, so when is she getting back? And no, she's not coming back. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? And we're talking about Korea. So 14-hour difference.
Yeah.
And I had to figure out how we were going to do that because now she won't be able to attend closing and she won't be back for a while because she's there for personal reasons. And so I felt terrible. And because it was now 1 a.m. her time, I had to call and have some notary thing happen. But she was up from 1 a.m. till 5 a.m. Korea time and, you know, pretty upsetting. And I get it. And that just, I don't know, to me, when someone says, hey, everything was going great. And then that happens. And they're like, you know, how did that happen? And you dropped the ball kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I'll pay $5,000 all day long then to hear that I've,
sure,
you know, done that to somebody or inconvenience them at a time that they're already like dealing with all of the crazies of moving and being in a different country altogether. But I have not had anything
that's great
that cost me money as of yet. Except for I did say I would pick up the tab on the $1 a minute calls that she had to make from Korea. So,
yeah.
But you know, I tried to.
So least, that was a price tag.
It was.
You had to do so $1 a minute.
A couple hundred bucks, maybe.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah, which is fine. I mean, all things considered.
Okay. And then the emergency notary, I think, was another $100. So I don't know, a few hundred dollars, maybe.
Yeah.
But I've heard horror stories.
Yeah.
So why don't you share one of yours?
I'll share one of mine. No, I don't want to share the $5,000 one. Needless to say, I'll say the $5,000 one was there was a chain of miscommunication of the age. I was the listing agent. We were selling a house. The buyer's agent was the buyer. So she was representing herself. And she said, I'm sending you an offer over. This is the price. And I said, great. And I communicated to my clients. Now I don't ever communicate my clients until I'm showing them the contract. So lessons learned, right? Mm-hmm. And this was pretty early on.
Yeah.
And was with a couple that was separating and they were selling the house. So it was already like a difficult situation. And you don't want that. But I felt really honored to be like, trusted to say, hey, I get that this sucks and we need to get this taken care of as part of y'all moving on in your lives. And anywho, and so I communicated what the buyer/buyer's agent had communicated to me to the clients and then sent them a contract and they signed it. And then, you know, they maybe like 3 weeks into the deal that the lender sent something over. One of the clients was looking at it saying, hey, this number is $5,000 different from what we had signed or what we agreed on. And I was like, okay, well, that's weird that that document's wrong. Let me go look at all the other documents. And the contract that we signed was a $5,000 different number than what the buyer's agent told me. And then what I told them and just passed along. And none of us had caught it. We were just looking through the contract and we're like closing date, And so I said, it's this, and they signed it and they didn't read it. They ought to have read it. They ought to have caught it. But ultimately, whose job was it? It was my job.
Right.
It was my job. Mm-hmm. The agent said one thing, delivered something different, but it was my job to read that thing as if it was my final will and testament. And, and I missed it. And, you know, I was always afraid of making that mistake and I made it. I just made the mistake. And so I, of course, like stepped up and said, hey, like, that's on me. I said this, you trusted me. I'll pay the difference. Like that's, you guys agreed to this amount of money. We're going to make sure you get that amount of money. And it sucked. I would have liked to have kept that money.
Right.
And yet doing the right thing, I just couldn't imagine, like, what am I going to do? Go to court and be like, get proven that I had, like,
yeah. Well, you owned it. Yeah, you have to. We're all of us are going to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And I think that I can appreciate that in somebody, especially in an industry that can be like, hey,
yeah,
my bad.
Yeah.
I'm going to make it better, though.
I'm going to make it right. I'm going to fix this. Yep. And it worked out and we were fine.
Again.
I still got a small commission on top of it. Okay. Thank God for that. But
yeah.
But you know, and it goes out, but of course I'm like worked up. I don't think I cried, but I was like, I was pissed. Yeah. And myself, it's like, it's just mad. Like, cause 15 seconds of closer looking would have changed a lot, mm-hmm. changed just the tone of the deal and everything.
Yeah.
Like, it's like I've only been in like two car accidents in my life, but it felt the exact same way where it's like, if I had just pumped my brakes a little bit or had I gone this way instead of that way, like I'd have been fine. And then you just like crash and like, you can't undo it. It's just,
it's done.
The wreckage is done. Now you have to live your life with that truth. Mm-hmm. And, but it's definitely changed my language. And anytime I send a document, it's like, please read this thoroughly. Like, please read this fully and thoroughly. Yep,
me too. Please review and sign.
It's like, please double check these numbers. Da, 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 da. Like it is that. It's because we're just not getting there. And of course, now I check every contract 5 times. Sometimes just bring Jess over and be like, hey, can you just look at this, make sure that number is the number that I'm saying out loud? I'm saying this. Is that what you see?
Yeah.
Am I having a stroke?
Yeah,
just making sure.
Yeah.
We're not going to do this again. But my productivity coach at the time, Marty Miller, he and I were just processing through that. You know, I'm just, and of course I'm saying it was a mistake and it was cost, like, and he goes, no, man, it was a costly lesson.
Yeah.
And he says, will you ever do that again? I'm like, no. It's like, well, it just cost you $5,000 to learn that lesson. Mm-hmm. It's an expensive lesson.
But yeah.
Now you'll never do it again. He's right. So.
Well, I'm going to learn from yours.
Lord help me. Go through that. My God.
But I get it. I mean, it's crazy how you could just miss something like that. And like you said, you go back and you're like, man, I would have taken an extra like few seconds to do it. But it happens to the best of us.
Yeah. It happens. It does. It the other one, I'll say this, we're just airing all my laundry now. It's just like a good confession time to get it out there. The other one was actually my first deal. And some friends of mine had taken pity on me. And I was 3 months in, running out of money. I spent, all my time playing video games and making a website that nobody looked at. and these friends took pity on me and let me sell their house and help them buy a new house. Mm-hmm. And so it was on the listing side, they had closed. It was sub 200,000. So like wasn't a big deal by any means. Big for me at the time, felt like it was huge, but it wasn't massive. And they had taken amazing care of the property. They had cleaned it. They had all this stuff. We'd gone to closing. I feel great. Like, this is awesome. And then I get a call from the buyer's agent that goes, where are the curtains? It's just that.
Oh my gosh.
Where are the curtains? And, like, yeah. And I go,
what do you mean?
And this is an instinct that I've had to overcome where I've texted somebody. Somebody in leadership. Maybe it was our broker. Maybe it wasn't. And was like, are they supposed to leave the curtains? And they go, no, they didn't have to leave the curtains. And I was like, okay, cool. And so I just respond, they weren't supposed to leave the curtains. And then they send me the contract, like a picture of the contract with like red circle. It's like attached to the property and da 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 curtains, da 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 da. And so that, like, I just had to like, what do I do? And so I said, hey, I'll like, I priced it out. I got on Target. I'll give your clients a $300 Target gift card and they can go buy their own curtains. And they go, okay, that's fine. So I swing by, drop off the Target gift card. But again, this is my like first commission. I needed every penny. And so that $300 felt like a big deal.
Yeah.
But that is what it is. And so then maybe like 2 months later, those friends that had let me sell and help them buy the house were hanging out. And I tell that story and they go, oh, we had the curtains. We didn't actually even want to take them.
Oh my gosh.
They're like, we had them in a box. Like we
totally would have. We just thought they didn't want them.
Yeah. We thought we were supposed to take them. And like it was a hassle to take them down. We would have glad to leave them.
Oh man. Of course.
And again, of course. So one more thing I've learned is like, okay, let's look at this list of things when you're selling a house. Because these all come with the property. If you don't want them to come with the property, you need to like indicate that.
Yeah.
But yeah. And so that's like got a double kick like 6 weeks later. They were like, yeah, they were in a box. You could have just come and gotten them. We would have been happy to give them.
Yeah. I think part of the reason why maybe I've been a little bit more fortunate in that aspect is sure. I don't like it when I disappoint people. And so I think might be a little OCD on like checking and double checking and triple checking. And then also like, hey, can you check this too or whatever? Mm-hmm. But like I said, so far so good.
Yeah.
I'm like, no.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, having the transaction coordinators, that really helps because they're just, that's what they do all day, every day. And they're just wizards with contracts and everything. And we talk about real estate being a people kind of oriented industry. Mm-hmm. And I've heard it said that like when you become a realtor, you're not in the real estate business, you're in the lead generation business. That right. It does not matter how good at buying and selling houses you are. It's not good at, it doesn't matter how good you are at negotiating contracts. Mm-hmm. If you do not have clients to help buy and sell and negotiate on their behalf. So, I mean, how has that looked for you when it comes to lead generation? Are you really disciplined with it? Are you a little laissez-faire? How do you go about finding clients?
So I am mostly referral. Mm-hmm. I think initially I just kind of told everybody, you know, and in being new to the area, I didn't know anyone here 5 years ago. I got really, really involved with my church and they were praying over like when I got my license and all those things. And so it was just kind of word of mouth, word of mouth, word of mouth. And my church was meeting at a junior high at the time. And now we're in a church building. That I got to be a part of the beautification team and stuff. And that was really, really cool. But it was more word of mouth for me. And then after kind of helping one family there, it would lead to another and another and another. And I should be better about like calling my sphere and all that, but I feel like I'm in contact with them a lot of the time that we catch up a lot of times over social media. So for me, it's more, I'm not a person that cold calls and like feels like I need to be calling every day, even though I know that there's probably more opportunity that I'm maybe missing there. But I also believe I'm supposed to help who I'm going to help regardless. But yeah, it's interesting. I don't do the lead gen, I guess the way it's typically taught.
Sure.
I really do feel like I just put myself out there, have conversations with people. But I do believe in marketing yourself. I do think social media is a big thing. I've had a lot of clients from out of state just look people up in the area, and then my social media feed comes up, and then it leads to, I see that you're a family person. I see that your kids go to these high schools and things like that. And so, for me, it's more word of mouth and referral. I don't really try that hard to go and do the other side of things, which sure. I'm sure would work great if I would implement that. It's just not my style.
Yeah.
It just isn't.
Yeah.
I wish it was sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I get it. I think mine is very similar. I do some work with my sphere and just trying to touch again, be really intentional about being in touch with people. Yeah. I mean, in the same way, I think it's very word of mouth. It's very referral basis. And I think when you are able to build that trust and relationship with people, I mean, there's a guy who has sent me like 3 leads this week, like just one guy. Mm-hmm. And the crazy thing is I have never done business with this guy. I've never met him. He was a lead I got from, I weaseled my way into getting a bunch of rental leads from the Loken Group. And he was like a lead I got through that. And like I reached out, we connected. He reached out on behalf of his friend. I don't know. But he has sent me 3 leads this week. And they're all like great leads. And I've never met him. But he and I have just like had a relationship. I've taken good care of like his friends in the past. Mm-hmm. And now he's like this advocate of mine where he's just like, Rusty's your guy. Like you need to go talk to him.
I love people like that.
God bless them.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're keeping my kids fed on my mortgage page.
No
so.
Kidding.
In which I mean, like, I get it. I think the imposter syndrome of real estate is so strange because, and I'd love to know if this was your experience, but for me, it felt really hard to feel like a success, even though I was making more money than I'd ever made before, because it felt like, well, what did I do? Like, what did I do to deserve this? Yes. Yeah. Like I negotiated the contract and I made sure inspections got done and we got to closing and we took a selfie and like, we did those things. Check, check, check.
Yeah.
But like, you know, did I deserve this? Did I earn it? Like, it just felt so strange. And I feel more and more at peace with the money that I make. I go mm-hmm. like, no, I, because I've seen how badly it can go wrong mm-hmm. and I've saved my clients tens of thousands of dollars. I do feel like I'm worth my value. Mm-hmm. And yet for so long, it just felt like, well, people just keep recommending me, but am I, is that like, work?
Why?
Well, yeah. yeah. So I mean, there was so much imposter syndrome in the midst of all of that. Have you had it, all of that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it still happens mm-hmm. here and there. I mean, no matter how successful, I just don't really try to pay attention too much to that. It's important, obviously, but yeah, no, I do feel sometimes like, I'm like, man, I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. I am doing this. And, yeah, I still struggle with that, honestly. Yeah. I really do. It still comes up and it still kind of creeps up on me. Like, why do you want to work with me? What is it about mm-hmm. me that it sets other agents apart? But I do know my worth and I do know my value. It's not that I don't, but it just creeps up on you. And you think like, why me? Do I deserve this?
Yeah.
Am I really doing this? I mean, you get awards and whatever. And I just think I'm like, hey, I got an award. It's weird.
Yeah.
to me.
I guess.
That's just kind of how I
well, know. And I think that a lot of what we're offering people as a service is kind of our natural being, like of who mm-hmm. we are. Of like, again, I'm just doing what I.
Yeah. You're just being Rusty. Yeah. I'm just being Macy.
And,
like it's.
And
just,
that's actually helpful. Like it's actually and profitable to our buyers mm-hmm. and sellers. But yeah, it does feel weird because it feels like you should be like, I don't know. I think it goes back to the rant that I had at the beginning of this thing of just the different agents out there. Mm-hmm. You and I both know agents that don't care about people.
Right.
They care about closing deals.
Yes.
And they have built machines mm-hmm. to churn through mm-hmm. lead generation, cold calling.
Yeah.
And there are elements of this business that could be like just absolutely predatory mm-hmm. and take advantage wherever they can. And I mean, like hate the player, not the game, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I think we just do business in a different way so that it is like we're not necessarily the norm.
No.
I mean, I think within our brokerage, we are. I think that the
people. Well, and that's exactly why we're there, though.
Yeah. Most of the agents in our office are mm-hmm. very people oriented, value driven mm-hmm. people. But there's just the barrier of entry is so low and there is money to be made. And there are people that know that and take advantage of that and give us a bad name. And that's frustrating.
It's super frustrating. I hate that we're kind of put all in one box mm-hmm. together. And it's no, there are several different types of agents out there. And again, whatever floats your boat, however you want to work your business, it's totally fine with me. But you know, it's, I don't look at it that way at all. I just think it's so much more personal than mm-hmm. that. And I also try to put myself in it. If it were me, how would I want to be going about this? I mean, it's exciting if you're a new person to buy a home, first time home buyer, getting married. And then, but there's also the sad side in that, that side of things too. But I don't know. I do still struggle a lot with that imposter thing. I really do. Mm-hmm. I just am like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And that might be maybe a weird thing to say, because I do own who I am and I love that I'm an agent. And I'm so sorry that's so loud.
It is what it is. It's fine.
You're probably gonna have to do this whole part all over.
It's gonna be great.
I cannot.
This goes with it. I just, you know, he's got the hat, he's rocking it. I'll interview him. He come in here. He can come on. So I'm gonna ask him about that hat because it seems
like it's
functional,
like
but also a lot of form. So it's a whole mood.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, I think the imposter syndrome. We absolutely. I mean, it's a reoccurring theme and in all of these conversations that I have. And if there were any advice I had to like combat that, I think like it's just celebrate your wins and like really just recognize and try to give yourself credit when appropriate to do so. You know, I had a deal not too long ago that like we were in a negotiation and I just knew that like we shouldn't cave. And I thought my clients were going to cave. Like I thought they were going to try to meet and give them an additional $8,000.
Yeah.
I was like, I really recommend you don't.
Yeah.
I was like, I know you want to. I know you want this property. Mm-hmm. I know that by not doing it, you run the risk of not getting the property. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you should.
Like, yeah.
I don't think I don't think it's worth that. I strongly recommend you stick your guns. And you're like, okay, like yeah, well, okay, we'll do that. And then we got it.
Yeah.
Like, and they were just like, they we awesome. Called their bluff and it worked. And mm-hmm. I was like,
yes,
I knew it.
Yeah.
I told you. Like,
yeah.
It was like, sorry, don't say that to my clients. I was like, yeah, see, I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah. Well, it's just, it's one of those, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but I think that that's a little bit of combating that mm-hmm. imposter syndrome. See, like, okay, see, I know a yes. thing or two.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I know I everything, this. But yeah. I'm willing to find answers. Yeah. And, that's a whole thing. Do you, let me ask, I'll ask you this. Do you ever see yourself becoming a broker?
Yeah.
Yeah. One yes. day.
One day, maybe, possibly.
Is that responsibility? That's my biggest thing. Yeah. I just like, even when Randy became a broker, I was mm-hmm. like, I don't, dude, like, I mean, that might be why I don't have a team right now, is I just think like the pressure of having other people like relying on me. And then, mm-hmm. you know, you think about who I'm trying to like talk you out of. It. Like, you don't want to do this, Macy. It's not a good idea. Is I think, right? Like, I'm just trying to make sure I don't make mistakes. Now you have other people that make mistakes, right. that their mistakes mm-hmm. fall on your head. Mm-hmm. Like that. Like, I don't really
want that responsibility. Yeah, that makes me
squirm a little bit.
Yeah.
But maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that, I mean, I have plans to at least have it.
Yeah.
And if something comes out of it, great. If not, not. But I think that I want it for whatever reason, mm-hmm. just to have it. You just never know.
Sure.
I mean, our world is so uncertain as it is.
Yeah,
so sure. If I need to like somehow leverage that and use it or whatever, then I will. But no, it's funny you say that because it's just kind of been a new thing that I've been considering.
Just thinking about. Yeah. I'm gonna put you
Did
on
I
blast.
Tell you about that?
No, I just, you talk about the leadership and you talk about building a team. I think that it's been cool to see you build a team and think through the business mm-hmm. side of that. And, cause yeah, I think again, there's a lot of different ways to do it, but
yeah. I mean, I have one, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, we've been all over the place with real estate and brokers and, mm-hmm. and et cetera. I hope that we got to talk enough about you, but yeah, as you think through your business and being a business owner in real estate, what advice would you give people that are getting started, maybe specifically in real estate? They've got their license and they've got a broker and now they're like, okay, now what? What do you recommend?
I would say the first thing, honestly, is to own it. Like really start to truly believe that that's what you're doing and then show up every day for that, whether it's, you know, a little bit at a time, whether you're reading, like especially in the beginning for me, all I did was submerge myself into like continuing education and like learning like the systems and all that stuff to kind of practice all that so that when the time came, like when official business started coming, I would at least have that mastered. And I'm not going to master anything else until I'm in it, right? Because every single deal is different. I mean, you learn something all the time. So I would say own the part, be dedicated, be patient. And just, I mean, you got to tell people. Like you got to let them know this is what I'm doing. And just do it. I mean, honestly, I mean, you gotta own it. Cause if you don't, then it's really easy to be like, well, this isn't working out because I haven't had a deal in this many months or whatever it is, but you just kind of got to go with the ebbs and flows of it and, surround yourself with other people that are going to help you grow. I think mm-hmm. finding a good brokerage that will give you those tools and support is huge. And it doesn't have to be anybody big. You just need to go and like interview those different brokerages and make sure that's a good fit for you and really figure out your why you're doing this and your mission, vision, values. A little plug there for Randy Olive.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think all those things are super important and will keep you driven. So support, you know, keep learning and then just to show up every day and own the part. And I think for me, a big part of it is networking with other agents. I think going around and meeting other agents and seeing how they do their business and learning from them also kind of gets rid of a little bit of that imposter syndrome too. And you're like, hey, I'm doing the thing. I'm here to do this.
Yeah, there you are. And you just, it's just as messy as
you
got
to bet on yourself. You've got to bet on yourself in this industry. You have to like go all in
mm-hmm.
or don't.
Yeah, or don't. Yeah, or I mean, don't. I think the stats are, I always butcher this stat, but it's something along the lines of like 90% of the people who get their license won't be doing it in 2 years.
Yeah.
Something like that. Is that
well, this is my longest career. Like yeah. I everything for me was on average about 3 years, and then 10 years, obviously, at home. But
yeah,
I've had so many different jobs, but that's okay.
Yeah.
It led me all here. Here I am. Yeah.
Making a career of it.
Yeah. Even thinking about it, all of them have been like somewhat, like I said, people, sales or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then there's the history of the parents and the mom.
Yeah.
The mom thing. Never even thought about that.
Totally. Yeah. It's in our blood.
It is to
be doing this.
And my uncle. Now that I think about it, but okay, we can keep going.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why you're in it and why you're really good at this. To that point of people, like the turnover rate in real estate, what was it that made you stay in it than others? I have a theory on why it worked out for me versus some other people, but I'm interested to know if you have like a thing you can point to and say, this is the reason why I made it and those others failed out or quit, whatever.
Yeah. Oh gosh. That's a good question. I mean, I don't really know very many agents that aren't still in it.
Okay.
To be honest, that I've met. There are a couple that I went to real estate school with that I know just kind of went back to their full-time jobs. But my scenario for me was a little bit different, I think, because I have a husband who works full-time and has that corporate job. Mm-hmm. And so kind of gave me that flexibility. But I think I was very realistic from the very beginning. I'm like, this has to fit in my world with the kids and everything. And then legacy became a big part of it too. And two, you know, I didn't get to finish college. My life circumstances were really, really tough. So I had to go into survival mode and do what I had to do. So showing my kids that you can do that, and be successful at something at any age really, really kept me from like quitting and like, but I truly do love it. It's a psychological thing too, I think. So.
No, I think having something to prove is a really good motivator, and to yourself, to your kids, to prove this point of like, yeah, it doesn't matter where you come from, but like you can make a way and you can make a path and find a way to build a life that you want. Mm-hmm. You know, what's it that success isn't complicated. It may not be easy, but it's not complicated. You just do the work and do those things. Yeah. I think similarly, I don't know that it was. I did feel like I have something to prove. So absolutely. I think that's, I share part that pride. Like, well, I can beat that person. Yeah. There's a competitive streak, but yeah, I think a lot of people that I felt like I came in with a crop and a lot of them bailed. So I was like watching. The crazy thing to me is that there were agents that came in right at the same time I did that I thought were better than me at every element of this job. Like more organized, more like better at sales, were willing to do like cold calling and, but also like really socially adept and felt like they would have been able to do great at negotiating and managing the ups and downs of the deals. But it came down to like, they didn't need it. And the drama of it, the work of it, the weird hours, the being on demand, I think they're just like, I don't
want to do all this. Yeah.
Yeah. And you said earlier that you kind of like the drama of it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to like admit that, but I do. I do really.
I think you kind of did a little bit right now.
Yeah, maybe. I do really like the I like the game of it.
Yeah,
and I don't. So that's where it's like I don't particularly like the drama, but that's a part of the game, and it's a part of how do we make this work, and how do we find this puzzle, and you know, manage the client's expectations and their emotions, and also make them feel awesome and feel like the most important person, and get them what they need. And
it sparks, I think, too, as I'm getting older and the more I'm digging into like my different strength and like Enneagram and like emotional intelligence, I love what it does for me personally with growth. Like it almost ignites like some of my strengths. And I'm like, hey, I'm really good at this. Like, and this is part of my job. And so that's part of the whole, I think, drive for me with that, along with the dramas of the ups and downs. But it does really kind of awaken those gifts that I thought were just kind of like, hey, I'm a good friend, you know, or, you know, when someone needs me, you know, I'm there for them. Or in my family, I'm the peacemaker. Like when anything goes wrong, it's like, where's Macy? Like, you know, and so all of these like life skills that I had, I didn't realize could also be in pursuit of like a career or alongside of it. And I'm super passionate about people. I love talking to them, finding their out about their story and like why they're doing this and that. And so if I can be a part of that chapter or season of their life, however that looks, business or personal, that's awesome to me. And so this is just another way for me to do that and also provide for my family. Yeah. So why not? And I love it. And I don't know, the drama, it keeps me.
Yeah. It keeps coming back. It's always a cliffhanger.
It is. I'm like, what's next? You know, sometimes I'm like, bring it on. And then other times I'm like, well, but then I'm in it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That element of joining people's lives for just a little bit. I mean, so much of this show is an excuse for me to kind of put a foot into some of these industries and get a glimpse into it without having to do it, without having the baggage of it. But you do, I wouldn't say that we like become a part of the family, but we do get to hang out with these families and individuals for a long period of time in this small season. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're buying a house and depending on how long the process goes, how many properties you see, you get to kind of be a part of what they're doing. You get to know them and you become a trusted person in that family. Mm-hmm. And then it ends and you kind of get to keep up and say like, I miss you.
Check in here and there, but not the same.
Yeah. I don't know that I'd like really put my finger on that, is that you do get to kind of enter into their lives for just a little bit and be a part of it and then peace out and continue the relationship from there on. Is there anything that you want to share that you didn't get a chance to share? Because this was such a back and forth conversation.
No, I mean, I don't think so. I love what you're doing. And I appreciate you giving me the honor of being another fellow realtor and friend on your show. I think what you're doing is amazing.
Well, that's very kind of you. So, well, thank you for your time. Thank you for being a friend and answering my questions about contracts at weird hours. All of it. Yeah, you're a great realtor. And people, if you're not going to hire me. For whatever reason, you're like, I don't like that guy. Macy's my recommendation. Oh, you should go with Macy. If it's not me.
Yeah. Take your pick.
One of these two. I mean, I'd like it to be me, but Macy would like it to be her. So, you choose.
Maybe Rusty will eventually join me too. You know.
Never know. We'll see.
I'm just going to throw that out there. That's fine. You can cut it out if you want.
But it's fine. We've been playing with it for a long time.
I know.
Anyway, well, Macy, thank you so much for your time, and we'll talk to you soon. A huge thank you to Macy and to you for listening to this episode of Houston Made. If you enjoyed this conversation, be sure to follow Macy on Instagram at Macy_V Realtor or visit her website, mvrealtygroup.com. Honestly, if you're not going to work with me, I'd gladly recommend Macy and her team as an excellent alternative. I'm sure as you picked up on this conversation, she works incredibly hard for her clients and strives for excellence in everything that she does. I'm honored to get to work alongside her, and she's just been a great support and guide for me and my own real estate business, so I'm happy to support and promote her as a realtor. If this is your first time listening to Houston Made, I'd absolutely recommend that you go check out some of our other episodes with guests from all kinds of industries, ranging from authors to chefs, college planning mentors to electric scooter rental owners. If you're interested in connecting further, you can find me on Instagram at Rusty J. Gates or the show at Houston Made Podcast. I really would love to hear about what you've got going on, what you're building, and see if I can't support you in any way. Houston Made is hosted by me, Rusty Gates, produced and edited in collaboration with Luke Bronner. Our artwork was designed by Stephanie Leal and Sarah L. Wegfe in collaboration with Mac Ryan Creative. Credit for our theme music goes to Old Friends, New Friends. Houston Made is glad to be a part of the Milieu Media neighborhood of podcasts and storytellers. We're people who care deeply about human connection. In our neighborhood, we find that connection by hearing and appreciating one another's stories, and of course, by sharing our own. To find more shows made by amazing storytellers from all kinds of backgrounds, visit MilieuMedia.com.